This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conquers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague, Wheelie Dealer, at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks in episode number 85. It's the 5th of October and it's currently almost 6:30. We started a bit late today for a few reasons, all down to me. Juggling a few too many tasks today. So I'm sure many of you have seen and have experienced quite a lot of volatility over the past week or so, more so going back to last week, which was the end of the quarter, and 29th of September, 30th of September. And then lo and behold, we open up on Monday, the first day of the first quarter. And the markets were down in the morning. I think I've got something here-ish on Monday morning. We're more or less sitting at 6,800. And 6,800 was the low around 10 o'clock on Monday morning, which was October the 3rd. This is Wednesday the 5th. And we've subsequently rallied. We've had 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, where the market just went whoop, whoop. US markets and et cetera, et cetera. Pete's going to talk about possible reasons why that happened. But today, the FTSE hit a small 3-day high of 7,086, having, as I say, touched a low of 6,800 and the mass panic that we saw on Thursday. And even today, we dipped again below 7,000 again, just before our new prime minister leader Liz Truss started to speak, and the markets rose a little bit and then fell back a bit, and then we closed today at what was it, Pete? 7,052, I think, is where we closed today.
Yeah, recovered quite a bit. So that was
recovered helping. A little bit from the lows of this morning.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. It's more volatility ahead. I keep saying this, and I've put this out on a tweet, which, you know, just a funny sort of, guys, ladies and gents, look at what's going on here. And it is a cartoon of a chap measuring another person with a measuring instrument and then it falling straight into his groin to wake people and say, these small and large bear rallies will happen, but we're in a bear market. So don't get carried away thinking it's over. You know, the market's going to start rising. We'll be sitting at 7,500 again. We're in a bear market. So if you see people have been saying since March, April, May, June, July, August, September of this year, that's it. It's over with. We're moving on now. I can see the markets rallying from here. Not been correct so far. We had this conversation, Pete and I, on the last podcast as to where the markets were going to go. And I was saying, and I did say, and I did call it, I didn't think it'd happen that quickly. The markets were around 7,250-ish or thereabouts. And Pete and I were having the conversations, where do you think the market's going to go? And I was saying, I think we're going to see 7,000 or less before we see 7,500. I didn't think it was going to happen in the space of what was, I think it was 3 days after. I think it happened on the Friday.
Oh, yeah.
After recorded on the Wednesday. Yeah. We didn't put it out till the Friday.
Yeah.
And it actually happened on the Friday. 2 days after we launched the last podcast, I was like, whoa, didn't see that coming. It was mad. The markets are mad at the minute, and it's lots of volatility, lots of really good quality stocks that are hitting 52-week lows, hitting multi-year lows, and people are going, what's going on? How comes no one's told us about any of this? And how comes no one's mentioned that the markets are this risky? Lots of people have mentioned that the markets are risky. Pete and I mentioned last September, someone else said, oh, if only we had the hindsight of, Pete and I have raised Games Workshop. I raised Games Workshop You know, I got absolutely lampooned for it. Everyone's, you know, given me pure grief for it ever since. I'm not saying that I don't get stocks wrong. I get loads of stocks wrong, right? But every now and then, you shouldn't just beat up the person that says maybe one stock or two stocks or three stocks are overvalued, because when they halve, no one's going to come back and say, actually, I wish I'd listened to Conkers. No one's going to come and say that. Yeah. But I'd rather not anybody lose 50% of their number one, number three, number four holding. Nobody wants to lose that size of money by that kind of percent. So just please have a look at the market and beware of these sages that are telling you that this new high is going to go even higher, because often when things are overpriced, when the market's correct, those stocks will get hammered. Some of mine have been hammered too. Some of Pete's have been hammered too.
So much has been hammered. It's staggering. I look at a lot of stock charts. And ones I really notice are when you look at the Investor's Chronicle, you look at the results section in the back, they always have the charts at the bottom for each of the companies they covered. So many of those are just downtrend, 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 downtrend. You find one that's up, but it's downtrend. Down. I mean, and it's, you know, it's right across the board. It's a messy picture.
It is. I mean, I put out a picture of the S&P 500, and it was Thursday the 29th, all red, bar the odd one. And another picture of the S&P 500 on Monday evening, which was all green, bar the odd one. So my question was at the time, what has changed, Pete? Yeah. So what's changed from that date to that date? And I pose this question to my followers on Twitter. So I'll ask you the question, Pete.
You know,
what changed? I'm going to give you, because there was only 240 letters on Twitter. One sentence or two sentences. What changed from Thursday when everything was red to Monday when everything-ish was green, and also the FTSE and S&P just completely smashed it and rallied 2%? What's your reply? Short, sweet.
Do you know what? I think it's basically down to a technical move. I think we'd got to the point. I don't think we're at the bottom, if you see what I mean, the final bottom, yeah. But I think on this particular leg, we hit a bottom around, well, it must have been the end of last week, whatever it was. And we could tell this by looking at the RSIs, which were massively oversold. And I looked back over, you know, years and years and years, every single time the RSI goes down to RSI 25, we've had some sort of rally afterwards. It may not be for long, but there's been some sort of rally. I think what happens is the sellers had every opportunity to sell. There was so much selling pressure in that really painful period. There was two particular days that were really quite nasty. And I think the sellers just got exhausted. We ran out of sellers. And then you get a reversal on the market. I think there were hammer candles or harami candles on those days when it reversed. And since that, we've rebounded because now the buyers are more interested again. The buyers have got the upper hand. That's what I think it's more of a technical thing. I don't think anything's changed fundamentally. If anything, the fundamentals have got worse. But I just think it was due a bounce because it just got overdone.
Okie dokie. Well, I'm going to read some replies, okay? Going to give them, because I put this out to my followers on Twitter, and I got replies from Scrumpy 222, A Child of the 70s, Running Profits, Faisal, Vonnie Leah, at DB Mutton, at Ashuman Guzan, if I pronounce that properly.
Antonin, yeah.
Michael Ben 69, at Mr. JC Hughes, at Corrigan Paul, at SM Investor, at Ollie Investor AI, at Mark Lean Bruggen, at Curious Mister, at Flap 10, at Robert B04975596, at Richard RD Sut 76, and Little Dave at SAB, and my friend Reedy, Tommy Reed replied. These are the replies we got, okay? And these are not in any particular order of as to how they were sent. Friday, end of month. EOQ, as in end of quarter. Selling exhaustion. Sentiment extremes are mean reverting. Bot buying. Passive ETF tracker loading. And DCA, new month, new cash. Yeah? So you know what DCA is, yeah?
No, what are we talking about? Oh, is that where every month people drip it in?
Dollar cost averaging.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, yeah. It's where people every month have a
every monthly every month they drop in amounts. Yeah. So that would have helped the first day of the trading month. Short covering, dollar down versus pound, and which is 12% of the index, and quasi U-turn helps. So that was the stuff about all the cuts, and then potential talk about the reversion or the U-turn, which is not a U-turn. Yeah. Ending with humans love narratives, markets are complex and don't care. Another answer, Mr. Market remembered to take his medication. Love the sense of humor. Whispers of a pivot, again about the Fed. Liz and Kwasi ? Their LinkedIn post says their actions could spark a global financial crash. So that may be why the markets rallied, because they had to then reverse and do a U-turn. Article here. UN fixed it all. An article claimed the US calls on Fed and other central banks to halt interest rate increases. One of my favorites, simple answer, the color changed on the two pictures I put out.
Brilliant.
Another reply, day of the week, sunrise and sunset times, most people's underwear. It's a bit random. The weather. This is what I love about people's comedy stuff. I love this. Tory government policy, Some random stuff on a postcard. Okay. Another reply. The conclusions of the algorithm, the start of a new quarter. Suspect quarter end is part of it, but sell the rip, methinks. Technical bounce from being oversold. Another reply. Apparently, it's this investor thing called sentiment. Like that one. Michael Bublé, feeling good lyrics. Strange reply, but I like that one as well. I don't get it. And with the added news of a bank potentially collapsing, you would think there would be widespread capitulation. Another reply. ISM manufacturing employment numbers. Consensus was 53. We actually got 48.7. All points to weakness in the economy. Fed reasons weakness equals lower inflation. Another reply, the bond market in the US indicates pivot. They're doing it for the Fed, no different to raising rates. Liquidity is drying up. The leverages are coming out to play like Credit Suisse, and it's about to implode. Take EU first. Can US allow it? Another reply, even in the bear market, there can be more good days versus bad days and up days. NASDAQ CEO started listening to your podcast, like that one. Nothing has changed in my view, except sentiment. It's bonkers, conkers. And then my friend who had attended a charity event with at the Warwickshire County Cricket Ground, Edgbaston, he basically said it was because we'd attended the Pakistani Flood Appeal dinner. So there you go, Pete. No one knows.
No
all
one knows.
All they saw was a market rallying on Monday and Tuesday, and going, thank heavens for that. Yeah? 2 days of market rallying, and just like, oh, the relief. And then today, we were down 1% in the blink of an eye in a couple of hours this morning, and then it went back up a little bit. We managed to get back above the 7,000. But instead of 7,000 being support, it's now one of them where we're like, we're just trying to hang on there now. It's almost as if that's it's the resistant level, even though we're above it. It doesn't mean much until we get again above 7,250, I think.
I read that differently. I still stand by what I said. I think when you have extremely low RSIs, you get some sort of rally. We got the really low RSI last week. We had the reversal pattern on the candles. We had a huge up day yesterday, and it was obvious. And I sent out a tweet last night saying we will have to give some of this back most likely. What happened today? The bears tried to take it down again, but they failed. And we've ended up with doji candles at the end of the day, which really just means it's gone sideways today. It might go sideways tomorrow. It might go sideways the day after. But I expect we will see more upside. But I don't know how far this will run. You know, I don't expect it to run far if it does happen. And if you look at what's happening in America now, that's rallying hard as we speak. Well, anyways, let's just check, confirm that.
Well, whilst you're checking, I'll counter that and say to you that whatever the low RSI that you saw on Monday, that low RSI will be hit, and you'll see a lower RSI, and you will see lower than 6,800. If this market and Liz Truss carry on tinkering and messing, and people lose. Not her, but lose trust in the government.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The technicals don't mean diddly squat right now, Pete. None of them mean diddly. What matters right now is what... Listen, let me finish. What matters right now is what the government do, because once people lose faith in the government, they lose faith in the financial markets. And the financial markets are the Dow Jones Index, the S&P, the FTSE, the AIM. They'll go... Don't trust this government. They haven't got a clue what they're doing. If people go, you know what? Actually, I think, you know what? Kwasi and Liz Truss have got it together. Market sentiment changes. Mood changes. Yeah. People start to buy. They start to invest. They start to say, oh, let's throw some money at the United Kingdom. Right now, they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that, Pete. So, and that's where we went on last Thursday, Friday. Whoosh. And then on Monday morning, until she came out and did a U-turn, it was still tanking. And the reason why it changed wasn't because of technicals. It was because there was a U-turn coming. And since then, we've gone from 6,800 to 7,086. 286 points, Pete, in the blink of an eye. It wasn't because of technicals. It was because we got a U-turn. And she can call it, no, it wasn't a U-turn. And Kwasi can say, wasn't a U-turn, you know, but it was a U-turn.
Yeah, I don't read it the same way. I mean, I think
that's the beauty of the podcast. Yeah. We do not have to agree.
No, totally. And I mean, I read it that Truss doing a U-turn over here in the UK. Yeah, great. What is interesting is that America's rallied hard yesterday, and they gapped at the open. That's significant. When you get a gap, especially from a low level, a gap suggest there is some buying strength around. Now America doesn't rally because Truss has suddenly got some confidence come back.
They rallied because what happened was we were trying to sell gilts, and then we went in and bought gilts, Pete.
Yeah.
Changed the sentiment towards dollar. We've got loads of stocks, Shell, BP, HSBC, AstraZeneca, Glaxo, that make a shed load of revenue in dollar terms. And when the pound's tanking...
Do you notice what happens so often, right? When we get to extremely low RSI levels and we get these panic days and we get severe panic like we did last week, you often find government intervenes. And that's exactly what happened last week. Government had to do something. And whether...
They don't intervene with the market when the shares are falling, Pete. They intervene when the Treasury can't sell the bloody gilts, mate. I'll tell you what. Let me just give you this feedback. Right, so this is from Sean Dent, BSC. And he said, hi, Conkers and Wheelie. Nail on the head on podcast 84 with regards to gaming sector in terms of people staying in more and gaming with revs up yet valuations down. You only have to look at Saudi Arabia's new esports strategy to see the growth is massive. Then we had Michael T, which is Michael 514-92851. At Wheelie, I like resting stocks. Many say the biggest fallers, but people want to sell these stocks. Why buy them? Occasionally, they are correct, but often the ones to buy are those that haven't fallen, the ones people don't sell because they think there are good stocks, the resting stocks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way of looking at resting stocks, absolutely. So where were we anyway?
So I wanted you to explain the LDI and why the LDI happened.
Right.
That's what changed the markets as well.
Now, I actually, I want to just say hello to James Connolly, who talked to me about this and helped me do some understanding on this. LDI is something that's been getting a lot of attention, you know, because it was why the Bank of England had to act, basically. And what it's about, it's liability-driven investment. That's what it stands for. Now, the way to understand that is that normally when a fund, let's think of a pension fund, when a pension fund invests sort of the old-fashioned way, if you like, they focus on their asset side of their business. So you've got assets and you've got liabilities. So the assets are the gilts, equities, you know, what property, whatever they hold that has a value, that's the assets. The liability side is what they've got to pay out to their pension scheme members. Yeah. So it's really important to understand that difference. So what happened in the old days when you could get a supposedly risk-free, but we've sort of discovered in recent weeks that they aren't risk-free.
Nothing's risk-free.
Yeah, nothing is risk-free, yeah. When you could get, like, risk-free government bonds yielding 5-6%, it was a no-brainer and very easy to just focus on the asset side and to just buy these bonds, and the coupon stream from the bonds would pay for the liabilities for the people's pensions. But the problem was, with all the, I was going to use a rude word then, it's probably better if I don't. Let's say the jiggery pokery. With all the jiggery pokery done by central banks, where they've effectively, you know, with quantitative easing, with lowering interest rates, they've basically squeezed any kind of yield out of government bonds. And yet at the same time, they were forcing, governments were forcing companies to buy these government bonds as a thing called financial repression, because they were perceived to be low risk. So there was this hunt for yield. The problem pension fund managers have is that, you know, they've got to be achieving 3-4% return on their assets to meet their liabilities. Yet they're buying these bonds and only getting 1-1.5-2%. So you can see the problem. So some clever wheezes, and guess who's involved in this? Yeah, the likes of BlackRock, probably Goldman Sachs, probably other banks are available.
Schroders.
Yeah. So the likes of all these companies, of course, go to the pension funds and say, oh, you need to start thinking about liability-driven investment strategies, LDIs. And, I mean, LDI's got a wider meaning, but in the meaning we're talking about related to the events of last week, we're really talking about where basically the fund manager goes to a company like BlackRock. Sorry to single out BlackRock, but BlackRock, if you're listening, just see it as good advertising, yeah? Something like that. They go to a company like BlackRock and they say, look, we want, you know, we need to get more return. What can we do? So what happens is BlackRock say to them, well, look, we can do a swap arrangement where basically we agree to pay you the returns you need to meet your liabilities. But as a consequence, you need to give us collateral in the form of the assets you hold as, yeah, well, it's cash, really. They need collateral that has a value. It's not cash. They would actually exchange the bonds and stuff. So basically, it's a bit like if you use a spread bet account, you'll understand this very well. When the positions start moving against you, your margin, your collateral starts getting eaten. So you get a margin call. You need to provide more collateral. So, of course, what happened in this crisis the other day was that the value of the gilts starts falling. So in order for BlackRock and whatever to keep the swap arrangements going on the LDIs, they basically go to the fund manager and say, look, we need more margin from you because your margin is squeezing with the value of the gilts getting crushed. So what then happens is that the fund managers panic and they start selling gilts into the market so they can meet the obligations they have to BlackRock. Sorry, BlackRock, but hey, it's an advert.
Yeah.
As a consequence, what actually happens is it makes the situation worse because the selling by the fund managers to get their collateral requirements, their margin requirements, just drives, because it's selling. It's just driving the price down. So it basically becomes a disorderly market. They're all on the selling side. There's no one on the buying side. So that's when the Bank of England suddenly wakes up and thinks, oh my God, we've got a problem here. And they came in and started buying the bonds and said, we'll do whatever it takes. Now, the thing to understand about this, there's been a lot said about this, saying this is a real, you know, potential problem, a bit like we had in 2008, 2009 with credit default swaps, yeah, with CDSs. I think there is a slight difference, and that is that the liability-driven investment swaps, they work fine if the rise in bond yields and the decline in bond prices is steady and progressive over time. And that is what has happened for most of the last 6 months or so when interest rates have been rising. There's been a progressive change, which gives the fund managers time to plan and to sort of rejig their assets and to make sure they've got enough margin collateral to keep the LDIs going, yeah? But yeah. The problem was because it happened in such a panic. That's what really caused the problem. So I think if we see sudden drops like that again, yes, it could be concerning. If it continues in a more orderly way, we might avoid a problem there. One other thing to note on it was that Legal & General, LGEN, came out the other day and they said, we have no risk to these LDI strategies because we just act as an agent between, for instance, the pension fund management people and BlackRock, say. That's an advert for BlackRock, yeah? So
other companies.
Yeah, there are other banks available. So, did that make any sense?
It made a lot of sense, and you explained that really well, Pete. Bravo, well done. I want to say something regarding that. And obviously, the government stepped in and purchased, had to go in and buy 65 billion worth. So that's what helped the markets on Monday as well. So that was part of the U-turn as well. The other aspect of that regarding LGEN saying we're not exposed in that way, it's at the end of 2021, the LDI market was worth 1.2 trillion. That's end of 2021. I don't know what the figure is now. That's the latest. That's the biggest numbers. Latest numbers I could find.
It'll be similar.
It won't be far off. It won't be less. Yeah. It will probably be higher. So bear in mind that is the size of it. 1.2 trillion, right? And there was lots of talk saying we came within hours of having a Lehman moment. Yeah. If the you've got to remember. The management of pensions and the pensions fund industry is the cornerstone of the finance industry, right? And if that goes, the pension industry gets walloped, the domino effect just goes ripple, ripple, ripple all the way around. And before you know it, we're going through a financial crisis. And there was talk that we came within hours of doing that. This is how important it is.
Well, imagine.
The LGEN comment a few days ago, basically saying we haven't got the exposure because we're middlemen, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Please be careful. Please be mindful that there are several insurance companies that are involved in this space. Just because LGEN have come out and said that they're fine doesn't mean that all the other insurance companies that are involved in this and financial entities are fine. Do some digging if you own another insurance company similar to LGEN or financial company that's involved in this space, because they could well be exposed to it. And remember, yeah, that what day are we? We're Wednesday. I think it was Monday that LGEN came out with their numbers.
Yeah.
Lots of the other insurance companies all rallied when the markets rallied, when LGEN said, we're not exposed. Everyone must have thought, well, therefore, if they're not exposed, therefore, our company's fine. That doesn't mean that at all. So please double check. Because if they come out in 2 weeks' time and say, you know what, we were exposed to the LDI and we still are, the market is just going to wallop them. Yeah?
You know,
so please double check.
I've got two thoughts on that. On one side, I suspect that most banks will have, most insurance companies will have a similar model to LGEN. Because
you're wrong. You are wrong.
Okay, that was my suspicion. On the other side of the fence, it is strange that they haven't come out already and said we have no liability. That's
Pete, so up until Monday afternoon, up until Friday and Monday, 95% of the people, including those I've spoken to that are in the financial industry, didn't know sweet FA about LDIs.
No, I've never heard of it. Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. But I just think it's the kind of thing that people like BlackRock, Credit Suisse, or other banks are available.
These thoughts speak for themselves, Pete. You've got to remember when we went in the financial crisis, how many people knew about CDSs? They thought they were CDs.
Yeah.
No one knew. Yeah. And this is LDI. It's like, what are LDIs?
Yeah.
Didn't have a Scooby Doo what they were, mate.
So
this is how maddening it is. You think you've got rid of all of that nonsense and all those, you know, shenanigans,
yeah,
and then you find out something new. An LDI, what's an LDI? You're thinking, oh my gosh, here we go again.
Do you know
it's
what?
It's dangerous out there.
The other funny thing, when I started trying to research what LDIs were, God, it is so difficult to really find a good, simple explanation of it. But believe it or not, I found it on some bizarre Malaysian website or something that, you know, that actually gave a better understanding of it than any of the sort of ones you'd normally go to. It was quite shocking, really.
The only problem I've got is, mate, is that your Google search, mate, I'm not sure you were looking at that. Sorry, I was going to go somewhere.
Well, maybe LDI is something
myself.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not listening to what you're saying, mate, because your searches are just not right. Not right.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Mate, we need to talk about the charity backup, yeah?
We do. Can I say a quick something before that?
Yeah, you do that, because it'll take me a while to power up the beast.
Right, okay. I want to give you, ladies and gents, a quick heads up. The fantastic organisation that is the Association of Investment Companies, you can find on Twitter at AIC Press. They have got a fantastic event occurring on the first massive retail event, on the 28th of October in London. And it's the Investment Company Showcase. It's at Novotel in London. Free event for all retail people to sign up for. And they've essentially got a lot of the leading investment company fund managers. And they'll be going lots of different sessions and panel sessions and discussions with regards to all things investment companies. So they'll be covering property, income, tech, ESG, you name it, whatever sectors that investment companies cover, there'll be discussions on that throughout the day on the 28th. So if you're in and around London or you're available from morning of the 28th through to about 4 o'clock, that's definitely something to check out, because you won't get the opportunities to look some of these fund managers in the eye on this sort of way before the end of the year, I don't think. So it's a really, really good opportunity to check it out. There is a code. You can book your place now using the code SOC, so that's Sierra Oscar Charlie 22, when you hit the link that you can find on the AIC website, or you can just find them on Twitter at AIC Press and then click on that particular link to the event. But definitely check it out. The people that are involved in that are the brilliant Annabelle Brody Smith, Nick Britton, and all of the AIC Press team. So definitely check it out if you're around on the 28th of October, but book your places as quick as you can. Go for it, Pete.
Well, mate, while I think of it, just very quickly, yesterday I opened my Investors Chronicle and out dropped a leaflet thing, and it talked about something called the London Investor Show, and I think it was 27th of October. I don't know anything about it, but if people live in London, they fancy going to something that might be worth. I think it was called something like London, www.londoninvestorshow.com. That's all I know. So
okie dokie, mate. Okie dokie. Cool.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So every year we try to support a charity of some sort of our podcast and to sort of leverage. That's such a bad word, isn't it? Leverage. It's like a politician would say, leverage the power of our listeners to, you know, to do some good and get some money to sort of help people out. This year we're supporting a charity that I've been involved with in the past, which is the Backup Trust. I'm paraplegic, paralyzed from chest level down, T3 paraplegic for people who might understand such things. And basically, Backup is a charity that specializes in sort of doing rehabilitation and help and mentoring and do a lot of work with children that for spinally injured people. They do some really good stuff, and it's a good charity. You can find out about them. I'll just try and see. I think they've got a website. They're on Twitter as Backup, and obviously if you just look on Google Backup, you'll find them to learn about more about what they do and whatever. We've got a Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising/twinpeaks. You can find the link on my Wheelie Dealer 2 website page, the top of the page where it's got podcasts. Pete always puts it on his page, and it's on the link when he sends out the tweet and when the first tweet comes out and whatever. So if you want to help us, want to make a donation, that'd be fantastic. So far, we've had 56 supporters, which is fantastic. So thank you, everybody. That's a really good effort. We're up to £2,299 now. So we're ticking along nicely, but obviously it'd be great if we can get some more. I'll read one out here. A gentleman called Josh Thomas, huge fan of the series and a great cause to donate to. Keep up the great work. So he's given us 50 quid and the gift aid, which is fantastic. A guy called Dan Blackman. I don't think I've read this out before, but this is really good. It says he's given us nice donation. He says, "You guys are great, straight, wise, and genuine gentlemen, the kind of men I'd like to share my problems with." Oh God, thanks. Okay.
just the investing problems, mate. Please. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Dan.
Not just portfolio angst. As I feel you'd always give heartfelt, honest advice. Thank you.
Brutal honesty.
Yeah, no, we would. I mean, seriously, if people have problems outside of investing, you know, we're reasonable people. Right. Franklin, nice little donation there. Thanks for making a smile on the red days. I like that one. That's really good because I often think this. It's like when the market is really miserable, what better time to listen to our podcast? I mean, it just makes total sense.
Absolutely. We need to take investing seriously, but we don't need to take every single couple of down days that seriously. And I keep reiterating the fact that most of us are investors. We're not traders. So we're not looking at a one day, 2 day scout. We're looking at what our portfolios will be in 5 years, 10 years time. I'll have to put out the farmer's quote that I the poem that I wrote, Pete, that I read out several months ago. Remember that poem about the farmer, about planting the seeds and the crops? And I'll put that out again going forward so people just reiterate it to people.
Good call. One here, I got a funny thing. I read this out last week, but maybe I didn't. From Whittam Rocklaw, thanks, mate. Great work. Thank you for sharing your knowledge for free. Nice donation there. Just see if there's any more there. I think I read most of these ones out last week. Oh, I've just hit the wrong button. I've ended up giving.
No worries. I think that was the last one. And yeah, okay. I'm sure. I'm sure that individual you just mentioned, did you say Wickram?
Whittam Rockrow, yeah.
Whittam Rockrow. I'm sure he's already made a donation before. So if he has, that's brilliant of him to do that.
I think he has, generous. Yeah. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So that's we're moving over and towards 2.5K now. So the sooner we can get 2.5K, sooner
push
we can get
to
£3. Just so whilst we're talking about charities, it will be, I think, 2 or 3 weeks' time. It will be before the end of this month. The charity that I'm an ambassador for is called Memphis, and they'll be doing their Christmas present launch appeal in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. We'll be looking to get to raise enough monies to deliver at least probably about 1,500 presents, given how bad things are this year. So we'll be looking to do a fundraise for that. Obviously, I'll just direct people directly to their website for that at some stage once it's launched. But again, we'll be going out, not knocking on doors, just giving people a heads up and then delivering presents to these disabled young children who will not be having presents elsewhere probably, or won't be getting that much from anybody. So we'll be delivering at least one present to them in and around Leicestershire and the Rutland area. So if you can help us with that, that will be absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely. Mate, what do you want to cover next?
I'm going to cover a US stock. Sorry, go on.
Before you do a stock one, let me just throw a very fast one in.
Go on.
The advert where it's got the Marine on the canoe and he's canoeing into the smoke and it's all dark, yeah? Advert for okay. Marine, so you picture it if you're listening
chocolate advert.
If you're listening on the podcast, I'm now rowing. I'm a Marine and I'm all in, you know, camouflage dress and I've got like my face blacked up and that. Gosh. Pete's not going to do that.
Some people just wishing they weren't watching this on YouTube right now.
Right. Anyway, do you know?
Carry on.
I was watching it the other day and I just thought it's brilliant because it says on the narrative, it says, humans are taught to fear the unknown. I just thought that was brilliant. And that's the Marines. And it's like the Marines, they teach them to confront the fear. And I thought there was a real analogy to the markets, how we've got to really try to keep ourselves calm, try and be objective, try to not let all the noise and the fear and the terror and this is going to happen, that's going to happen, the world's going to collapse. Don't let it all get you. Stay objective. Focus on what matters to you. For me personally, I focus on what's happening with the charts. I'm looking at what they're telling me. There's so much bad news around, you can't possibly understand it all. It's just too much of it. It's just a complete war of awful news. But if you're looking at the charts, looking at the RSIs in particular, reading the candlesticks, you can get a very good idea of what's probably going to happen next. When we got down to like RSIs of like 27, 28, we were nearing the sort of end of that particular nasty phase, and we would probably get a few days off of the stress as it's played out. So just, you know, just focus on, be objective, focus on what you like to focus on and don't let the fear get to you. And the worst thing you can do is keep looking at your screen because it just feeds the fear.
Exactly. Don't feed the fear. I would add to that and reiterate to the fact that if you're investing, you're investing, you're not trading.
Yeah.
You're actually investing something. Hopefully that makes a profit. Hopefully that pays your dividend and you can compound for the next 5, 10, 15, 25 years. What happens to the markets over the next 2 days or the rest of this week or this quarter or up to the end of December will not be that relevant to you if you can stay in the market for the next 5, 10, 15, 25 years. Where will the FTSE be in 15 years? I don't know. Will it be as high as it is now? I don't know, right? But the likelihood is that if you go out of the market and close your ISA down, which some people have done, yeah? And some people are going to be forced to do that because of the gas prices, energy prices, mortgage rates going up to the yin-yang. And most mortgages are going to go up by 30 to 40% over the next 6 months. These people are on variables or fixed, they've got to go to another fix. all of that's going to cause some people to capitulate and sell into the market. So if you don't have to do any of that and you're able to stay in the market and stay invested, the likelihood is, if you look at all the charts regarding all the previous market downturns, is that the markets have continued to rise after a period of time.
Yeah.
And I think there's a piece of research many moons ago that I read. I think it's 10 years. So I think after 10-year point of holding a stock, you are 99.7% assured that the share price will be higher than it is. If you hold a share for 5 days, I think you are more than likely 90% to be wrong. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that tells you the difference between being an investor and being a trader.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So think about that. And well done to all those that have stayed the course thus far without throwing the towel in. As I said in the last podcast, there are traders out there that can't even trade. 50% cash plus, 60% cash plus, 70% cash plus. You're a trader, can't even trade for 2 days, 1 day, or flip something in a couple of hours. That's how scared, that's how much Pete's talking about fear. That's how much fear there is out there. Traders can't even find anything to trade for fear. Right. Okay. So I want to talk about this stock, Pete.
Yeah.
Because it's related to an American stock that I've now got because of one of the takeovers. So I had Avast and they got taken over by Norton. And Norton ticker symbol is Norton Lock. It's $NLOK. So I've got those shares now. So I've got a bit of US exposure as well as other bits and pieces that I've got. This other stock is in the same niche, right? And it is called CrowdStrike Holdings. The ticker symbol is CRWD. I don't own it yet, but I'm looking to add another cyber play to my portfolio. When I was looking earlier today, the share price was at $173 per share. Market cap of $40 billion. And the price range, 12 months price range, was 130, and the high was 298. Now, it's a US listed cybersecurity technology company. So annual revenue is more than $2 billion. It protects customers, obviously, against cyber attacks across all manner of different environments, cloud-based as well. Obviously, laptops, desktops, servers, virtual machines, and Internet of Things devices. Remember, we're all going on this automation thing. We want to automate that. We want to talk to our fridge when we're on the train and all these sort of things. It's about making sure they can't be hacked. So that's the set. I'm going to try and keep this short and simple, but
yeah.
Cloud security, obviously lots of companies are keeping lots of stuff in the cloud. So it's about helping those sort of entities remain secure and not to be hacked. So my thinking about this really is the fact that they may not be one of the companies that get taken over, but they might continue the M&A / consolidation phase and buy up some of their smaller peers, because this is a company that's throwing off cash. So that's the reason why I wanted to bring it to you ladies and gents' attention. Obviously, as well, it gives you some US exposure. Now might not be the best time to buy it, because obviously we've got a weaker sterling to the dollar. So if and when we get a stronger sterling, maybe that'd be a good time to buy it. But if you've already got some US exposure and you've got a US related entity in your portfolio and you've sold that, or you get ready to sell that, and you're looking not to change your dollars back to sterling and then back to and then back to dollars again, You sell out your holding. If you sell any holdings, I would advise you to leave any holdings that you're selling at the moment that are US listed, leave them in dollars. Do not allow the transaction to be changed over into sterling. Whenever you do that with any stock, the platform that you're sitting on, right? I'm not going to name any names. You sell something in dollars, you say, I'll have the cash in sterling. They're making hay on that transaction by the FX currency rate that they're giving you on changing it back to sterling. And then you've left some of that in your account. You use it and buy something in sterling, fine. If you go back and then buy something else in dollars, you change it again from sterling to dollars, they make hay again. So just leave it there in dollars if you're going to go back and buy another dollar-denominated entity in the US or in the UK. So CrowdStrike is a company I'm recommending people research. I do not own it. It is just a research idea. Pete, yeah, what have you got?
I mean, interesting in terms of the sector and stuff. The thing that stands out to me, obviously, on CrowdStrike, I think, did you say 2 billion sales?
2 billion in annual revenues.
See, that seems very low amount of revenue for an extremely high market cap. And the forward PE...
And there's things out there with no revenue that have got similar market cap.
Yeah. The forward PE, according to SharePad, is 131 dropping to 92. As you say, if it was lower, it might be a lot more interesting. It's expensive. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. It is expensive, mate.
Yeah.
I do not disagree with you.
One I was sort of thinking of talking about is good old Avon, A-V-O-N. When you look at the sectors that aren't exposed so much to consumers, that have got a very moaty, niched kind of business, kind of offering, protected by regulation in effect, because obviously they're a supplier to MOD and to the US Department of Defense.
You're not talking about the cosmetics company then, no?
No.
Avon calling, knocking on your door, giving you your makeup. We were talking makeup last podcast, Pete.
Yeah, no.
Your chapsticks.
Oh no!
You're talking military.
I'm talking that.
I know you are, mate.
The company
that
got itself into a lot of bother with what was it? It bought a helmet. No, what was it? It bought a body armor company or something.
The main problem it had, mate, was that it promoted the milk CEO, that was part of the milk section, to become its main CEO.
Yeah.
No, a non-military person. And I think, I'm not sure if somebody will correct me. How many profit warnings did it have? The share price has created?
Plenty.
It's cost a lot of people a lot of money.
Yeah.
Has it bottomed? You tell us. Has it bottomed? Well, is it time to consider it?
Who knows? But I think when you look forward, you think, what sort of sectors are going to do well? As you said, cyber security is a good sector. I think defense is obviously a good sector because, let's face it, defense has been neglected by pretty much all Western powers apart from the US. And a lot more money is going to have to be spent on it. Okay, the governments haven't even got the money, but they're going to have to find the money somehow. And the important thing with Avon is that it's had a big change in management. There's new CEO either in or coming. And I like to see that change in a recovery stock. The last update, which I think must have been about 2 weeks ago or a week ago, whatever, was quite a positive update. And they'd won a contract for the helmet, you know, the new protection helmet thing and whatever with the US Department of Defense. So, you know, I think it's an interesting looking business and certainly the right
that
kind
contract,
of
that contract wasn't that big, to be fair, though, Pete.
No, but it's all, well, it was a framework contract, I believe.
Yeah, so it wasn't
from
that
memory.
Big.
So it's one of those that, you know,
testing ones almost.
Yeah, but, you know, it's. I just think when you look at the companies that are around, the sectors around, I think Avon could be good, especially as a recovery play with a new management team after being a disaster.
Okie dokie. Okay, all right.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEATS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
I'm going to throw one more in.
Yeah.
I think we're okay for time, but I'm going to throw one more in and give you the opportunity to do another one, MP. I'm going to pronounce this wrong, so you'd have to excuse me, with English being my second language. Diaceutics, Pete. Ticker symbol DXRX, right?
Yeah.
So they're a diagnostic platform provider for precision medicines. Yeah. And they had their first half update. Where are we now? Oh, a week or so ago.
Yeah.
First half revenues were up 25%. And they're basically saying that they'd had increased adoption of the platform representing 76% of their revenues in their first half. So the first half has seen a 73% increase of revenue. So that's a really strong sort of trend going on regarding the shares, and also delivered 25% of organic growth regarding their revenues. So they've got the penetration of data and TES, which is technology-enabled services, products and services, representing an increase of 52% as well. So a lot of big numbers there when you think about everyone saying we're impacted, we're struggling, blah, 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 blah. So that was one that I saw recently, and I thought that was interesting. And again, it sits in my sort of health med tech sort of niche that I like to look at regarding all manner of different things. So I just thought that was an interesting one regarding a pharma play, and again, precision medicines again, and that personalization of meds that I've talked about historically on here as another stock to have a look at. And going back to your idea and your suggestion and the discussion we had in the last podcast, I would class this as a resting stock. It's resting in a sense of it's not really gone anywhere in the past year or so. Up and down. But I think the last time I looked, it was down about 10-15% across the year, which, given consideration to other tiny little small caps, which is down 30, 40, 60%, and some big caps that are down, you know, 50% or more over the year. It's not too bad. And with those sort of numbers, it's almost like it's been, use my word that I like to use, and some people don't like using it, it's been spanked despite doing really well and generating revenue and growth. So that's one to consider. Ticker symbol DXRX on AIM.
The thing that hit me about it, I had a quick look at the chart, and obviously it had a bad week, but everything had a bad week. They, at the half year, they made a loss of 1 million. So if you just assume that's going to be 2 million over the year, they've got 20 million of cash. So they can absorb a couple of years of losses while those revenues grow. So that's, you know, that's a nice position to be in. But the fact that it's loss making obviously makes it quite risky. So it's, you know, it's not one to put the farm on, obviously.
Absolutely. It's a small cap. Again, just a research idea for people to have a look at. The reason why I like these sort of stocks, Pete, is that if these loss-making stocks, and people go, oh, Conkers is a nutter, he's bought a loss-making stock again. I haven't bought it yet. I'm looking at it, and it's of interest to me, because the whole point is that the speed of the revenue growth and the momentum, they can be there in a year or 2 years' time, and they're generating revenue, which is, again, a bonus. Some of them are just in the lab. This one's generating revenue, and in a year to 2 years' time, they will be generating profit. Mm-hmm. And for a small company like that to be generating profit and be generating speed of momentum regarding revenue, that makes them a really good candidate for the share price to accelerate once the markets are doing well. So it's an idea, suggestion. Go and do some research. It's not a recommendation. I don't do recommendations. And on that note, there seemed to have been, just before we had the 2 days of the markets rallying, there was a flux on Twitter. And I say flux with an L, because people were kicking off because lots of stocks were getting spanked and lots of people had been losing money. And they were basically saying, there's this person has been out here, this fund manager has been out here talking about all these stocks. And now look what's happened. Where have they all gone? They're not here to talk about the stocks that have got hammered. I will say this over and over and over again, right? If you listen to a podcast, this podcast, any podcast, you attend an online seminar and a fund manager or someone else is talking about a stock, or somebody's actually ramping a stock, they're not telling you you have to buy that stock. If you buy that stock and it goes up, you're not congratulating anybody but yourself. Yeah. That fund manager's talking about that stock. He makes a suggestion about the stock or ramps the stock and it does well. You're saying, aren't I a clever boy? Aren't I a clever girl? Aren't I a clever man? Aren't I a clever woman? Don't look to blame anybody. If you've chosen to buy a stock on the commentary of anybody on a podcast, go and do your own research. And if you buy it and it's successful, take credit for it. If you buy it and it's not successful and it goes down and it loses your money, take credit for it. It is your choice. Don't blame anybody or blame anybody that produces a podcast because you bought a stock. Yeah. Please take some responsibility, because otherwise you get to a juncture where there's lots of people who go, I'm not doing this anymore. What's the point of doing a podcast and putting it out for free for people to be educated if every time it goes wrong or somebody ramps a stock on a podcast, it's my fault? Just a thought, people. Show a bit of kindness, show a bit of love, and show a bit of appreciation and take some responsibility.
So true. I'm going to talk about a stock that might more one for the future, because I certainly don't think it's a good time to buy it now. Mind you, it's not a good time to buy anything, but we've been...
Pete, 5 years from 10 years from now, as I said earlier, it might well be the right time to buy it, mate. We could be at 6,000 next week, right, on the FTSE. And whatever you bought today in 5 years' time could be threefold or fivefold. No one knows, mate.
Exactly. This is one that, to be honest, I totally misunderstood before. Now, it's in a sector that I never tend to bother with. It's in the sort of asset management, wealth management. I guess it's more wealth management, really. Well, asset management. It's in that kind of space. I don't tend to bother with those stocks for the simple reason that they're really market. They're really.
I've got a stock in this sector. Please do not say anything, mate.
Oh, sugar.
I am waiting for you to drop the ball. You've got this for ages. I'm already dreading you saying the name.
It's going to be it. Right. So generally speaking, I don't invest in this sector. I can't see the point because the way I see it is they're market proxies. The market goes up, they go up. The market goes down, they go down. You might as well just buy a FTSE 100 tracker. So anyway,
anyone that can't see me on YouTube now, that's listening to this on Spotify, Apple and everywhere else, I'm just doing the cross across my body and praying that Pete does not say my stop. You can't see me visually.
So
go on, just spit it out, man.
So I've always misunderstood this stock because, to be honest, I didn't really know what it was. The stock
say the
in
name.
Question, I'm going to take that. Right. The stock in question is Frenkel Topping, F-E-N. Is the code. You're joking. You are joking.
I don't have it.
I thought I'd nailed you on another one. Okay. The reason I wanted to raise it is because I don't think there's anything else like it. I've never noticed another company that is doing what it's doing. And basically, it's an asset manager. But it invests money from personal injury payouts. So say, for instance, someone's in a car accident and they have a really nasty, really bad car accident. And let's say they win millions of pounds compensation because for the rest of their life they're going to need full-time care and all sorts of expensive medical equipment, and they're going to need a bus and, you know, specially adapted, or, you know, all the stuff. They FEN Frenkel Topping specialize in investing that wealth to make sure that the person who's had the claim gets the return they need every year, a bit like we were going to earlier on LDIs, but hey, let's not go there. And that's what they do. And I think it's very interesting because they specialize, it gives them a sort of niche, you know. It's like, and the thing that's really interesting, they seem to have lots of connections with lawyers and stuff. So when the lawyers, you know, win a case or whatever, the port of call they go to is Frenkel Topping. So I think, I mean, there's probably a few other competitors in that particular niche, but I just thought that made it a really interesting company. And I'd never realized that's what they did until I actually bothered to read it and to understand it.
Okie dokie. It's definitely one that's been around for a little while. I think they used to be lumped in with the ambulance chasers back in the day, and they had a few difficulties historically, but it seems to have gotten their head, their act together. I think the interesting thing about that I think the ticker symbol's FEN, isn't it? F-E-N?
Yeah.
Is that it's one of those, and you're probably the first person to have raised that name in ages that I've seen, Pete, because it's one of them names that no one really talks about, and those sort of companies always intrigue me. And I keep reiterating this. If everyone's talking about a stock on Twitter, I'm not interested. You know, so the ones that aren't being talked about is where I'm doing my digging. I've been nibbling at a couple of stocks. I've made probably the biggest investment I've made in a stock since the last time I bought Avast recently. We'll see where the market goes. And that's irrespective of me being bearish in the markets. I'm bearish in the markets, bearish in the markets. But if I see something, I'm thinking, you know what? I'm lumping that. I'm buying that now. I'm having it. 3 or 4 years time, let me have another look at it and see what's going on. That's what I'm going to do.
And we've talked a million times about, you know, don't buy everything in one big lump. Drip a bit in now, drip a bit in further down the track, drip a bit in further down the track, whatever, and space your buys out, because you're much more likely to get a very good price than if you put everything at once and it just drops and you're like, I screwed that up.
Occasionally, Pete, I'm gonna have a lump. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but the sensible thing to do is what we've said. You know what I mean? But I mix it up, mate. I mix it up.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Right. Hey, okay. What else you got, mate?
If you want another one, I'll tell you what, I'm going to say about another company that nobody knows about. Yeah.
Right. Let me just quickly say this, because I think it's very important, right, Pete? We've had all this, again, flux with an L, right, going on regarding Twitter. And the interesting thing is they're now saying, and I'm trying to confirm, that Elon Musk is going to actually go back and do this deal and buy Twitter. An interesting thing, and most of the listeners I'm aware of on here, we know via Twitter, and they're talking about or he's talking about, once he's purchased it, there's going to be elements of subscription-based fees.
Yeah.
So we really need to look into this, because some of the people that are on Twitter are just individuals like Pete and I. Other people have got accounts which are companies. And I think there's talk about, if you're a company, then you're going to have to pay. So there's going to be a certain number of people that are going to go, I don't want to really pay for a Twitter account. So that might impact some of this, the nuances of Twitter. And also, he claims he's going to do something whereby lots of the bots are going to be eliminated, or bots are going to be eliminated. So you might see some accounts that are going to be going. Additionally, where people have gone, and there's lots of accounts like this, we've got significant amount of followers been purchased from the dark web, you're going to see people's accounts suddenly going, because they're just fake numbers. Someone's got 20,000 followers and you never see any interaction via their account. Just fake accounts.
Except for advertising some ridiculous looking dodgy.
So watch out for that. Something interesting to look out for. And again, with Elon Musk, nothing is certain. But right now, the talk is that he's actually going to go and complete the deal. So that's for Twitter.
Mate, I need to wind this up, so we'll do it reasonably swiftly. I just want to talk about a company that's listed fairly recently, I think, but it's just to make listeners aware of this. Again, it's things that are off the radar, yeah? And this is a company which is called, in fact, I'm not even sure what a damn thing's called, but the code is SAAS, and they do fleet, so lorries, yeah? Fleet logistics software, and it listed Microlise. Sorry, it's Microlise Group. They listed when did they list? They listed about a year ago. Yeah, and Obviously, like all IPOs, it's been an absolute flipping disaster. So it's come off a lot. So again, it's one to maybe have a look at and see what's going on here and understand it, you know, when the markets are like they are and you're not overly excited about buying anything. I don't hold it. I don't hold any of the stocks we've talked about today. I don't think. No, I don't. But yeah, so Microlise, their last results update, actually read not too bad. And the thing that's really interesting is the recurring revenue. And it's with these software companies, it's always about, you know, annual recurring revenue, revenue where the customer, the fleet operator, has bought into the system, has trained all their lorry drivers on using the system, all the accounts people in the back office, they all use the same system. So there's a massive cost of doing that. And it makes it a real competitive moat, and it's very hard for a competitor to knock them out. So that kind of business is very much something to be interested in. And if that's one you want to have a look at, it probably makes sense.
Okie dokie. I think the only thing I want to, that's a really, really good one, mate. Really good one to actually share. I just want to say that one of the stocks that I had when I had a cluster of stocks that got taken over, Micro Focus was one of them. And what I've done regarding Micro Focus is that I've actually exited it now fully and completely. And I've exited that for a profit, including divvies, of 97% profit, having Love purchased it. Around so purchased 290 on the 20th of July and 270 on the 16th of November in 2020. So that's the 51st takeover in 8 years. The reason why I sold it was because of the market volatility, and I actually sold it on Monday. So my concern was the markets are tanking, and essentially I wanted to lock in the profits because there is a possibility, and there always is with takeovers, that the predator that's coming to buy this stock, because the market volatility, lack of liquidity, blah, 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 could just go, yes, we've made a recommended offer, but we're just pulling the plug on this now because the market's just so uncertain. We don't know what's going to go on. Yeah. And they could just walk away. They could turn around in 2 days' time and say, actually, we're going to give you more for this stock. So I've sold out at just over 521 was the last tranche I sold it at. The offer was at 532, so it's a tiny little, I'm just waiting around for literally 10 pence, 10 and a half p. I was like, I'm not going to bother. But equally, someone else could come out with deep pockets and say, want to offer £5.50, want to offer £6. You know, Micro Focus could say, actually, we're going to walk away. We don't want £5.30. So that's the reason why I've just gone, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to put that money into another stock at some point going forward. Sorry, Pete.
Link to that, exactly what you were saying. Biffa, B-I-F-F, had a takeover confirmed just recently. The interesting thing on that is that the takeover price is £4.10. I believe before, when the initial approach was made, it was actually going to be £4.45. So spot on. There's a lesson there.
Spot on. So that's another point. Well, very well made. So that's the reason why I'm always trying to just be wary. I'm still very wary of the market, even though I'm going trying to plunder. When I see opportunities. But the thing is, with seeking opportunities, sometimes they will come back and smack you in the face because they just get cheaper. So just be very careful out there, folks, and do what you can to navigate the markets and do as much research yourself as possible. Anything else you want to add, Pete?
No, I think we're all done, mate. I think my my food requirements are going off the scale. Yours must be absolutely bonkers because you never eat. So
I know. I've got some food to get in my tummy. Right, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much. That was Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 85. It is now gone 7:30. Pete and I have once again hopefully delivered you some insights for you to go away and have a think about. Thanks ever so much again for your support. Thanks ever so much for the feedback we've got. Thank you for retweeting it. Thank you also for those that have subscribed to our YouTube channel. We're desperate to get it to 1,000. So please, can you do us a big favor? Jump onto the YouTube channel just a Conker's Corner and just hit the subscribe button, because it will help us with the algorithms of YouTube, and they will end up promoting the podcast more, and that will help with everything else that we do going forward. So if you haven't done it yet, and even if you listen on Spotify, and even if you listen on Apple, and you if you ever go onto YouTube, just go onto the subscribe button and just hit the little bell thing as well to say we like this podcast. That would really, really be helpful for us. So thank you ever so much. Have a fantastic weekend when it arrives. This will be going out as normal on Friday. So when it arrives, do just have a great weekend. And as I always say, if you can do anything to any for anybody else in the community, charity, volunteers, donations, you know, dropping some tins off at the food bank, please do what you can, because times are hard out there at the moment. All right, people, take care and God bless. Bye-bye for now.
See ya.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.